There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm Rachel Forsyth, senior reporter at Hort Week, and this week I'm joined by garden designer Peter Donegan. Now, Peter is no stranger to our podcast. He was on last year chatting to our editor, Matt, but we have got a lot more to catch up on since that episode. Peter, how are you?
I'm absolutely superb. Thanks for having me back on, Rachel. And before we start, just for your listeners tuned into this, I'd mentioned to you off air, but the interview you did with Kate Sheldon, I think she's with Trees for Cities. And I just thought it was absolutely superb. She spoke from the heart, and I know I should only be talking about me, but that one just deserves a huge round of applause. Well done to both of you.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Peter. I'm sure Kate will appreciate that as well. Yeah, it was a really interesting one. And I'm sure this will be just as good.
Fingers crossed.
So I thought we could start with some of your most recent kind of projects, outings. And you were just at the Royal Windsor Flower Show.
Yeah.
That was on the 10th of June. And was it the 116th show?
The 116th year, headed by Alex Denman, who needs no introduction, former shows manager for RHS Chelsea. Philip Carter is the head of judging. Alan Titchmarsh was judging next to me. Let me see who else. Rob Hardy, Harkness Roses. It is literally a who's who.
Star-studded.
It's absolutely jam-packed. And I can't remember his name off the top of my head. My apologies. But the guy who made Princess Diana's wedding dress was one of the judges there as well. And I kid you not, what a beautiful day. But myself and Philip were chatting about it, and I was saying to him, you know, it's just funny. I was a guy who grew plants under my bed when I was 6 years of age, knew what phototropism was by definition by the time I was seven, so a little bit geeky. But I was the kid who put those plants into awards in the old school horticultural shows. And you take a show like this on a beautiful day in Windsor Great Park, and it is just absolutely everything that is a daydream for this now tall person masquerading as somebody who is entirely responsible. And what a humble and privilege to be one tiny part of something so magical.
Yeah. Did your parents know about those plants? That's the key question.
They did, actually. And Mom was 5'1", and I figured that out very quickly. So I put them on top of the wardrobe where she couldn't reach. But the water started to drip down on top of my brother's clothes. So I put them into the garage, and hence the leaning towards the light. And that answer of, you know, without definition, just wasn't good enough for this kid. So and that's what has me, I guess, speaking to you now in short, if we fast track a few years later.
Yeah, just a few years. And going back to that Royal Windsor Flower Show, how many of those have you been to? I'm assuming it's not all 116, but you could surprise me, Peter. Are you a vampire?
I am. No, I'm not that old. I'm still young enough, Rachel, but thanks for the compliment. No, it's year two, and it was funnily enough, it was a conversation with Catherine MacDonald, and I was talking to her about things that had evaded me in, I guess, my career or in my life. And apologies for burning up airtime, but myself and Andrew Fisher Tomlin got talking about this, and he was saying he judged a peak competition, and I said, you know, joking but serious, did you get a steel badge or and cake? And he went, I got both of them. And I said, what did you have to do? And he said, I just had to say which one was the longest. And I was in awe that you, let's be serious about it, that you first of all are accomplished enough in your career, number one, irrespective of what you're judging and where. And number two, that you get invited to be a judge, and it's not for monetary gain, but what a lovely compliment. And I said this to Catherine, and she, unknowns to me, emailed Alex, and Alex came back and said, we'd love it if you could come on. And that was last year. I think Alex has only taken over the show, or the reins of heading the show, of recent. And what a magnificent job she's done. And every single person sings her praises, from the food stalls all the way up to the guys who are selling furniture there. And I kid you not, it's just a beautiful day. I can't recommend it highly enough.
Lovely. And for anybody who isn't sure, what exactly were you judging?
Oh, I was judging the same as everybody else, which is the sort of grow a pot or a plant or grow five vegetables on a plate. It certainly isn't Chelsea Flower Show Million Pound Gardens. It's far from that. But I'll go back and say the humbling compliment, number one. You know, Titchmarsh is judging the same things that I'm judging, and it doesn't matter who you are. You've been asked. It's Alex. You just say yes.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, if she asked me to sweep up after, I would have done that as well. You know, and so would Alan, and so would Rob, and so would everybody else. But yeah, you know.
Amazing. And were there any standouts for you?
I think I'm always, and I'll be brutally honest with you, Rachel, you know, and again, I'll say the humbling compliment, and irrespective of judging category, I was that kid who put those things in for award, you know, again, some years ago. And you've got the next generation coming through, and there's a lot of conversations happening about, you know, inverted commas, young people in horticulture, and YPHA, who, again, have been on your show. And
yeah, they're fantastic.
They really are, and the enthusiasm in there, and you see what's happening in this, in certain categories, and you're scratching your head and you're saying, like, these are up to 15 years of age before you then go into adult inverted commas category, and the level of detail that they put into it, and a lot of them are as good as any sort of floral displays you would see at a, again, more mature level, if I might refer to it as that. And I'm scratching my head saying, who or what is behind the scenes who's actually making this happen with a new generation? What certainly wasn't around when I was growing up, Rachel. And now you see it, and it's at a show, and it's gone for display. And the disappointment of not winning award, of not getting a highly commended, of not getting a third, second, or first place, or a rosette, it's a knock-on effect that I guess changed my career. And that competitiveness in me, even at that age, was something that I still haven't lost to this day. But equally, as I noted to some of the other judges, John Anderson was there, and we were chatting about it, and I said, you know, sometimes it just makes you turn around and say, I never want to go back to it again. So it's fascinating to see it. And again, I'll say it, at a 116th Royal Windsor Flower Show, in such a beautiful location with a star-studded, jam-packed a portfolio of people, and again, I was but one tiny part of it, and so proud to be that.
Oh, how lovely. And yeah, I think you're right in that we are seeing, there's so many passionate young people that we do see coming into this industry and making a mark. But then on the flip side, you know, we do have that that skill shortage and the lack of people coming into the industry. Are we seeing a change in the tide? Do you think that it's just that there's not enough of those, you know, passionate young people? What do you think? Where are we at with that situation?
I'm unsure on that one, Rachel, and I hear it come up a lot, and like in my head, you know, don't get me wrong, I know I design gardens of a standard, and I may sound mildly egotistical now, but because of that ability to take a daydream, turn it into an equation and make it only ever appear like a daydream, as I would word it, I think, to be honest with you, we would say it in any language, in poetry in particular, in music writing, if you're teaching piano, if you're teaching horticulture, if you're teaching something that requires emotion and daydream, but also equations, sometimes the person at the top of the page, albeit they might be in a position of authority, sometimes they're not the right person to have at the top of the page. I don't mean that disrespectfully in any way, but when you take the YPHA of recent speaking at the House of Lords, they're the right people. But that's the first time in my career that I've seen, inverted commas, he says, the young people speaking to the elders, if I may, about how change should come about. That has never happened before. And I just find that mildly ridiculous, but also fascinating and deserved of huge applause on the other hand. And I think there's a part in the middle where, again, when you go to any school or any college and you stand at the top of the page, and some of the gardens we have done, they're almost like an Andy Kaufman. People may giggle at the start and then it wins award or you maybe do something more serious and then it's maybe appreciated a little bit better, he says, by his peers. So I don't have all of the answers, but I think all of my life, the joke has always been that when I went out on my own at 24, going 25, one woman said to me, you know, you don't have a beard and you don't have a woolly jumper. How can you have a gardening business?
Really?
And that's not entirely changed. The joke when I was 10 years in business was that I looked like I was something out of a bad boy band, he says, but a boy band nonetheless. But I still didn't have that beard and that woolly jumper. And I'm delighted to say that that's now changing. But in the year 2023, for it not to be perceived as an industry where you have an old man, inverted commas, in a potting shed, which became a Harry Enfield sketch at one point in time, it's now changing and very much for the better. And it doesn't have to be a nice nestled garden. It can be something that is a little bit more artistic or a little bit more of flair. And I refer in that to a garden we designed for a school. It's our first ever school's garden.
Yeah.
And in that one, it's telling because the brief that we got was an area for young people to feel like they could speak to each other, designed for young people, number one, something that was of daydream, and a outdoor school teaching area that didn't feel like a classroom. And in the middle of this, we take this 3.5 meter tall, four-legged giant squid. All I can describe it as. It's painted burnt orange, but it's loosely based upon what is a juicy salif, an orange squeezer, ultimately designed by a guy called Philippe Stark. And I remember drawing this thing up and saying the adults won't let this across the line. And so we gave it a lobotomy and put an anemometer, a thing for measuring wind, connected it into their science room and renamed it as a weather station. And we were giggling, again, as grown-ups, as designers, who get paid to do this.
Yeah.
But ultimately, what you have is a daydream of a garden that doesn't feel like a school's garden.
Yeah.
And when I presented this to another school teacher, they said to me, where are the raised vegetable beds?
Oh.
And I'm scratching my head. I refer this back to the original teacher, and she said, but Peter, this is an all-girls school. 50% of them, and this is, these are not my words, but 50% have manicures and pedicures and fake tan and aren't farmers, inverted commas, and drink mochaccinos and cappuccinos and like dressing up and like being, and if we have raised vegetable beds or spaces for farming, they'll be somewhere else, not here. This is a garden of daydreams and for inspiration. And maybe there's something in that, Rachel, where how the adults see things and what the younger minds actually want.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very interesting. Well, taking it back a little bit and kind of putting the judging shoe on the other foot, you were recently judged yourself at Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show. And congratulations are in order because it went very well.
It went extremely well. I'm Irish, obviously, by DNA, and one of eight children, and was never allowed to take compliments or get above my station, Rachel. And Dad would have frowned at me getting big-headed and saying that the largest show garden at Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, and the top three flower shows in the world, and first time ever in Australia, away for St. Patrick's Day, and strolled in. That was the appearance that I gave, but won gold medal and a 200 square metre Irish love story, as Channel 7 News in Ooh, Australia lovely. Described it. So, yeah. And the ultimate, I'll be honest with you in saying it was very much daydream to equation and only ever appeared like a daydream.
Yeah, and it is beautiful. If anybody listening hasn't seen it, you must go look up some pictures. But talk us through the kind of process of building it. What were some of the biggest challenges you kind of had to overcome?
Well, Melbourne International Flower Show takes place at a World UNESCO heritage site in the beautiful setting of Carlton Gardens. And so there's no digging down allowed.
Okay.
So it was really odd because we had designed this garden that was of the appearance that you could walk on water. And in a nutshell, you've got 45,000 litres of water contained within a temporary timber frame because it obviously only lasts for 5 days. The complete garden weighed 75 tonne. And when you're supporting a tree that goes 8 metres tall in the air, the difficulties really start to come in. And I think when you've got a contractor by your side, like Martin Semkin, and Dean Cartwright was the foreman on the job, a beautiful team of Werner's Nurseries, Bamstone, etc. And Marcus Gale and his team at IMG, you know, at no point in time did anybody ever say no to me. I told them it would be a beautiful daydream. We shook hands, we stood side by side, we created a team that was ultimately a symphony alongside the Semkin family, as I know them now. And I think when you've got that bit where the designer creates a series of equations and the contractor takes those series of equations and makes them happen, and when changes need to come about, which they do sometimes live on the fly, as is standard with any show garden, how you come out of them requires a hell of a lot of preparation. But we arrived in when it was dark, half five in the morning. We're leaving when it was dark. And so I did get to see a bit of Melbourne, but I think the appearance I'm told that I gave was that I strolled in like one of the Bee Gees and back out the door with a gold medal and my chest sticking out. And I can tell you, now, Rachel, I went home and I slept for about 3-4 days.
Like that.
Absolutely solid. And in between there, I think I did a couple of guest lectures, one at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Victoria. What an absolute stunning setting. And thanks to Tim Entwistle for setting that one up. And also at Melbourne University, which is, unknown to me, random fact, the longest continuous horticultural education institution in the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so a lovely privilege, really nice. And I have to say, I if anybody ever gets the chance, head to Melbourne. It's a dedicated horticultural show from the student elementary affordable gardens, my apologies, as they call them, all the way up to what is show gardens. Charlie Albone was one side of me, and then on the other side, a gentleman by the name of Jason Hodges. And again, yeah, it's a bit like Royal Windsor. What a humble and privilege to be allowed to be a part of something so special.
Yeah, amazing. And were you lecturing them about the kind of build process and design process?
In Melbourne Uni.
Melbourne
was really odd, and I'll cut to the second one if I may, Rachel. Yeah. The lecture in the Royal Botanic Gardens, what they were intrigued there and they chose the subject was the gardens that I had designed at Chateau de Perron, better known as Historial de la Grande Guerre, Europe's largest war museum, and the two gardens I designed there. So that was one. But they tell me they don't have any or many castles in Australia, so I appreciate the intrigue. And obviously, you know, Australia would have had a huge influence in what happened in those two wars, and there's an Australian flag flies over the castle as well. So it was emotional always, or is emotional always. My apologies when I dwell on those and the amount of time I spent in what I at one point in time described as my second home.
Yeah.
To the other side of it, in Melbourne University, it was a little bit explaining the thinking behind the equations, if I may, because when you see the garden in Melbourne, the Bamstone Garden, as it became known, because of Bamstone, the company's generosity in saying whatever he wants, give it to him, and rightly so. But when you get into that, it genuinely does appear like you can walk on water. But the story behind that garden was of a grown Irish man who ultimately cannot say to, in this case, the woman of his dreams, that he loves her. And because of that inability to say those three magic words, she never arrives. But there's a hope and a will and a want. And so he's sort of separated in his head forever and ever after.
Oh, wow.
On this sort of island away from her, in the hope that she will she will one day come. And to explain that to them, and then we obviously delved into the I don't want to ruin your interview here, my apologies.
No.
Rachel, but we then delve into obviously the television show and the gardens I designed for two series there. And when you get into them, you're talking about really tough, hard cases that emotionally I certainly haven't built for. Design and realization of gardens are a stroll in the park at all times. But at the same token, it's the emotional part that sometimes is the challenge for me. And I think to make a garden for somebody who needs a ray of light, it certainly isn't a park bench that you might see next to a bus stop or something that is very practical and easy to maintain. It's something that has to hide all of the 900 millimeter regulation things that are required and give you a beautiful garden, irrespective of whether you have something that is, may I word it this way, not entirely correct in life. And so you have a escapism, and it's only when, again, you stand in the middle of a garden in Melbourne, even though it's only temporary, and people start to come to tears, which is quite a compliment, but something that I don't think too many people really get to say. But that's maybe the coming from a guy who spent most of his time looking out the window in school, but was intelligent enough to teach himself how to speed read so he could spend more time looking out the window.
Nice.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, hearing you speak about Melbourne Garden, obviously, and I've spoken to you in the past about that garden you did at Europe's largest war museum. I'm not going to try and butcher the names there. And, yeah, you are very emotional and about these gardens, and they're very emotive. And it sounds like you might also take those to those private clients as well then?
I think when it's required, Rachel, and I'll be brutally honest in saying, like, I'm not very good at speaking about how I feel. Some of Melbourne London College of Garden Design's students, that's the sister college to Andrew Fisher Tomlin's gig, yeah. I should add. But some of them asked a question of whether the garden was based loosely on myself. But ultimately, I think sometimes the point I'm trying to make is that you don't want to think about the thing, and sometimes you want other people to see maybe what's in your heart. And I think there's a place for all. So in the castle itself, for your listeners who aren't aware, briefly, the first garden was designed in the dried up moat of the 13th century castle, 30 foot below street level. It had fallen in the Franco-Prussian War, again in the First World War, and again in the Second World War. And I remember the head of PR saying to me that this had happened, and he said his father was enlisted into the war. Sorry, he was born before the First World War, brought away, came back, the town was flattened. Got enlisted into the war, became a prisoner of war, came back, and the town was flattened. And the brief that I got was to, if I may use the word incorrectly, but to woo people into a space where between me and you and your listeners, only bad things had ever happened, and in there then for them to smile. And that's quite a tough brief when you take it at that.
Very challenging.
And we managed to somehow or another do it. In the middle courtyard, what you have is a space where you're trying to attract a newer, if I may, generation of visitors to the castle. And so you've got this juxtaposition between this Henry Siriani mass concrete back walls, which is the join between the place where you would go and look at this horrific war, do I call it museum, memorabilia, tour place. Mm. And for the younger generation of, say, I mean, 7, 8, 4, 3, 9, 13 years of age, you don't want to see all of it.
Yeah.
And this becomes a friendlier way of spending time, but gaining that education, but maybe not in the way of which he says the, inverted commas, the grown-ups are the stronger of mind might wish to do so. And so the story through scent and through herbs and through culinary and what would have been available at the time became a huge part of what we did in the courtyard, albeit we used a lot of steel and a lot of metitrichoia, mm-hmm. so newer products. But I think the challenge in the build is that it's a defence castle. And in the design, that means ultimately you've got a 2.2-meter Gothic archway that runs about 16 meters long, and you were never meant to get into the internal courtyard. So we designed it like sections of Lego, but made it never appear that way when it was rebuilt.
Amazing. We've spoken of, I think we probably spoke when it was still in the build process, maybe, or maybe you were just working on that second garden. So if anybody wants to kind of delve a bit deeper into that project, I'm sure there's something up on Hort Week that we can direct you to. So going back to your lectures, obviously you're no stranger to giving those. And I know coming up, you're giving a lecture to how many landscape design professionals was it?
There's 1,600 in total.
Wow.
And there's
from the Ukraine.
From the Ukraine. So they sent me a link of Adam Frost giving the same lecture. I think it was about a year or so ago, maybe two. And the list that they have, it sort of goes back to, again, Royal Windsor, Melbourne, and even the TV stuff. I think there's a part in it, Rachel, where, you know, I might think that I'm good, but to be asked and invited probably is the bit of, is glorification the right word? Or pat on the back, maybe, is the word I'm looking for. But I think they got in touch with me and just said, look, we're ultimately trying to keep this group of landscape architects and designers together. things are obviously a little bit of a challenge. And when I queried lightly how much of a challenge, she said, well, the guy who looks after the website and the social media is not able to do so at this moment in time, and we leave that to one side for now. But yeah, 1,600 design professionals, and again, what a humbling privilege to be asked to do so alongside a list of certainly who's who garden designers from the Big Island, as I call it, predominantly. And I think that's in a couple of days' time.
Amazing. And whereabouts are you giving that lecture?
It'll be logically done online.
Okay.
Yeah, in this case, it'll logically be done online. We've done a few of them. It's funny what again, I don't really want to get into the last 2 years, the BCs, as I call them. but I think it's sort of brought everybody into the 21st century technology-wise. Yeah. And I think it's made things a little bit easier. And I think at the back of it all, I'm probably glad of that, because I think there's a point in any place, in anybody's heart, Rachel, where sometimes you're not pretending that it's not there. And I'll quote what the French team said to me in 2018. The garden, the first garden that we did there, was to be respectful of the past and to remember the past, but it's also an eye to the future. And I think probably in this case there's a little bit of distraction from maybe what's going on around you, even if but for a moment, and hopefully things solve themselves faster sooner rather than later there.
Absolutely. So what will you be speaking to them about predominantly?
I think obviously the and again I'll say it, it's beautiful distractions, Rachel, is probably if I'm speaking about a school garden, if I'm speaking about Melbourne, if I'm speaking about the gardens in France or any of the ones we've done for TV. It's funny, actually, I'm distracting myself, Rachel. I have a tendency to go off on a mild tangent, but I was going for the SGD membership, which we now have, I'm delighted to say, after a lot of hard work. But I think the team, the adjudication team is the correct word, were asking me, do you not have any normal gardens? And it transpires for about 4 years solid. All I had done was TV gardens, French castles, and show gardens, which sounds very grand. And I apologise for that and getting above my station again. but I think in all of those that people tend to see or have seen publicly over the last 4 years, I think they've probably caught people's imaginations a little bit more so, because the cases in all, albeit entirely different and completely different, you start to realise everybody has their thing that isn't always entirely correct. And sometimes it's a place to deal with that, and sometimes it's a place where it's distraction from that. And the point I think I made strongly in speaking with the students at Melbourne Uni was that, you know, whether it's a garden for growing of vegetables and fruit, there is a way of doing it which is, if I may, for my granddad or my dad, and there's a way of doing it for somebody who is a little bit, inverted commas, younger of mind. And I think the class example in that was, we designed a coffee shop, obviously based on the Frappuccino conversation we had previously.
Nice.
But the outside of any coffee shop standard, albeit it might be plastic plants, is a sort of a raised area that separates the outdoor dining from what is publicly accessible. And so in those plants there, we took the square meterage of the raised beds, and we changed all of those plants to what would be culinary or of herbs, so they can use them in the home economics or in their cooking classes.
Nice.
Albeit it gives the guise of a garden that, inverted commas, he says again, a younger mind would appreciate. So, but I think the gardens that we've done have just literally done that, but consistently rammed into 4 years of my career. There's points when I go back, Rachel, when we did the 17th century and 18th century gardens, and they were 55 acres and 27 acres. But, you know, as I said before, they sound great, but 18th century or 17th century has 100 years less of plant knowledge required. So we did the 18th century first, and the research was, if I may, already done. But they're formulaic gardens that always look beautiful. I look like a genius, but I don't. You don't entirely get to daydream, if I may. And so, yeah. I think there's probably an element of that. And I think in my head, when I try and tailor a lecture or a talk to a specific group, it is literally just that. I approach it in the same way I would do gardens, in which case it's not the Peter Donegan Memorial Garden. You don't always need to daydream. Sometimes it can just be utterly sexy and wonderful and magical and beautiful, you say, like myself. But at the same token, we're both laughing. But I think in this case, and I hope you'll agree with me, I think distraction and giggling and tears sometimes, but tears whilst giggling are required. And if you can translate that into garden design with equations and then show the daydream post that, then I think you've got something that makes you do panto crowd noises and becomes quite endearing and beautiful, and fingers crossed it's received that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely some relief for them.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very excited to see what the future holds for projects for you, Peter. And with that, we've come to the last question, which is, of course, as you'll remember, what plant would you take to a desert island? Any ideas?
I have a regular Barney with Matt when I meet him, usually at a perennial gig, and the most magnificent charity, I have to say, still to this day, they are beautiful. But I was with Jim in Hilliers of recent, and you should know this, Rachel, I actually said to him, we used to get the Hortweek magazine when I was in college, and the first time I ever read about Hilliers, it was like reading about Highbury Stadium only in a magazine. It says he's a self-confessed Arsenal fan, and I said this to Jim, and I was 17 at the time, and now I'm a little bit taller, and your publication is available online. So, and I'm obviously not in college, but the both of us were smiling about the history of Hilliers Nurseries, and he brought me out to this field, and he showed me this tree, which he described as Marmite.
Oh.
And it's somewhere up online anyway, but it's a Quercus felis, and it was 8 meters tall. And the root ball of it is, I think he said to me, about 7.5 ton.
Wow.
And I could have hugged it forever. Oh. And then he told me the price, and I said, well, we might just borrow it on you, Jim, if that's okay. Yeah. So, yeah. But a Quercus felis is the tree.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Peter. It's been an absolute delight, as it always is, speaking to you. So thank you for coming back on.
An absolute pleasure, as always, Rachel. And genuinely, I know you know I'm a huge fan. I regularly send you notes telling you so. But at the same token, yeah, an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much to yourself and Matt for having me back on.
Brilliant. Thank you, Peter. And I'll pay you later as well for that. I'm Rachel Forsyth, and this has been the Horticulture Week podcast. Make sure you never miss one. Subscribe or follow Horticulture Week podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. If you are interested in producing a podcast with Horticulture Week, email us at hortweek@haymarket.com. Huge thank you again to Peter, and goodbye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.